happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. This is Jason Berlindi. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, that's John Rauhouse playing in the background. During a normal year, we are usually out on the road around this time doing photo shoots with our favorite musicians and instrument makers, doing interviews in person, shooting videos at our office. We even were going to have our third ever Fretboard Summit in Chicago this summer. Obviously, with COVID, none of that stuff is happening, so we decided to ramp up our podcast conversations, and I have to say, today is a truly great and fun one. I am talking to Joel Cordy of Chase Bliss Audio, somebody I've followed for years. I always try to go talk to him at the Winter NAMM show, but the lines are always three people deep. I never have been able to talk to him face to face, but I am so glad we had this podcast chat. Some of you are going to know all about Chase Bliss, way more than I know about all the intricacies of their pedals. But for those of you who don't, let me just put it this way. Joel makes some of the most interesting, beguiling, quirky, sometimes complex pedals that I have ever seen. The blooper pedal, the mood pedal, and the preamp Mark II pedal with its motorized faders are three of their most recent creations, and they're all kind of next to impossible to describe just by talking about them. So I would encourage you, if at all any of this stuff sounds intriguing, to head on over to YouTube and see some demo videos for those pedals, because they will blow your mind. And I think Joel's story may blow your mind too. In a relatively short time, he's built up this business and really changed how people think about pedals. These are not pedals that are just rehashes of pedals that came out three or four decades ago. They are their own unique, weird, amazing thing. And Joel is just a fascinating guy. We talk about a lot of stuff on this podcast. I will say, if you are a parent, I want you to go over to YouTube right now and watch the video titled The Story and Retirement of the Chase Bliss Wooden Boxes. I challenge you to not get weepy watching that. It's basically the story of a pedal company changing their packaging, but it is so much more. It's such a beautiful 5-minute long video, and it of course features music made through a Chase Bliss mood pedal, which just makes it even more haunting. It says a lot about who Joel is and Joel's family, and I think it says a lot about the soul behind this company. Everything this guy does is just filled with heart and soul. So we talk about all that. We talk about Chase Bliss's collaborations with other pedal makers, his stutter. We talk about mushrooms. Yes, Joel told me I could leave that part in, and a lot more. I hope you like it. Podcasts aside, the Fretboard Journal's 46th issue finally is going to be mailing very soon. It's in production right now. So if you want to know what the fuss is about, if you want a guitar magazine that your significant other won't ask you to take off the coffee table, check us out. Go to fretboardjournal.com and click on the subscribe tab. We have both the print edition, which is sort of a keepsake coffee table book style magazine, as well as the PDF edition for those of you who are just living the digital dream right now. I also should say, since we're talking to Chase Bliss and we mentioned knobs a couple of times, the Electric Guitar Annual Volume 2 that we put out earlier this year that features the Knobs and Mike Baranek guitar collaboration in it, we're down to like 100 copies of that. So if anybody wants the physical copy of that magazine, order it quickly while supplies last. We have a couple of sponsors, of course, our friends over in New York City at Retrofret Vintage Guitars. I absolutely love going over to their new arrivals page every week to see what they have in store. And right now they have a 1967 Guild M65 hollow body guitar, 100% original. They have a 65 Candy Apple Red Strat in stock right now, plus a 61 Gibson ES330 TD. So many amazing guitars. Just go to retrofret.com and get lost in their new arrivals page. And of course, tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you if you order anything. Our other sponsors are friends over at Mono. You can go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of gig bags and studio monitor stands. And yes, since we're talking pedals this week, pedal boards and pedal board bags as well. Go to monocreators.com. Can't thank both of those brands enough for supporting our podcasts and everything that we do. Speaking of podcasts, you know, we have a couple other podcasts in the Fretboard Journal family. So if you're not tired of hearing guitar talk, we have Luthier on Luthier, where Michael Bashkin sits down with fellow guitar makers once a month to talk about their craft. And now every week, I am talking to amp tech Skip Simmons on The Truth About Vintage Amps, which I guess is sort of the runaway hit of our podcast family right now. It's growing like crazy. We just launched a Patreon page for it, so if anybody's been digging that show and wants to support it even further, head on over there. I'll include a link in the show notes. All right, enough rambling. Here is more rambling with Joel Cordy of Chase Bliss Audio. I hope you enjoy this chat. Joel, thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being interested.
I'm definitely interested, and I am probably going to try to take a different approach than the umpteen other guitar podcasts you've been on.
Okay.
And that I feel like we could talk for just an hour about the amazing movies you've made.
Oh, okay.
You have made incredible films that have delighted me and made me feel like I am, and everyone I know, like they're part of your family. And I know just from recording these podcasts, like I agonize over sometimes the 3-minute intro where I have to plug our two sponsors. Is this a big part of your life, doing these videos? Do they come naturally?
Yeah, I think that I started Chase Bliss in 2013, and you know, over that time, social media and YouTube and Instagram have been such a key part of our growth. And I've always loved film and, you know, telling a story, I guess, and things like that. So it's always been like a fun extra thing. And I think that I really think that there's, you know, some power in being able to generate some authentic content that is kind of playful and shows off our personality, but then also, you know, informative.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back a bit. What was your background? Were you one of those kids who just was always tinkering with stuff and inventing stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I was always into, you know, I was super into Legos and like building model cars and stuff like that. And I just always kind of gravitated toward building things. And, you know, me and my brother were super into making video projects for classes. And my brother in particular wanted to be an actor and was pursuing an acting career. So I think it's just I guess I'm like circling back to the video stuff for some reason, but I just like it, you know. It's fun.
Yeah. NAMM was just canceled. Does that change whatever? I'm assuming you were going to announce something at that NAMM?
So NAMM's kind of funny because it's kind of turned into something that I'm not sure if it's actually the best investment for us anymore, because we've, over the last few years, we kind of have gotten more selective about what dealers that we work with and different, you know, dealers and stores and distributors and all that. Actually, I'm going to interject a little bit here. When I'm doing podcasts, I like to say at the beginning that I'm a person who stutters, which, you know, on a podcast can be like a little confusing because it sounds like not normal speech. So that's what's happening here. Anyway, getting back to the NAMM thing. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with NAMM. I love it because like I really love the theater of NAMM. I find it incredibly motivating to try to get a prototype together to make some kind of announcement, you know, try to see what other people are doing and kind of get wrapped up in that hype machine and try to bring something to the table that'll be exciting. But since we're in a position now with the company where we are so selective about who we take on as, you know, for stores and dealers and distributors, it kind of doesn't really make sense to go anyway. So when it's safe to do trade shows again, it's going to be a really difficult decision for us, because I do love it for a lot of reasons, but it's so expensive, and I don't know how much utility there is for us now in today's world.
Yeah. I mean, that's in the less than a decade that you guys, when did Chase Bliss start?
So I worked at ZVEX FX from 2008 to 2013, and then I transitioned to starting Chase Bliss and also continuing to do some contract work for ZVEX in 2013, and I released my first pedal, Warp Vinyl, the original version of it, because we've done a few versions now, in December of 2013.
Got it. So in 7 years, your company has grown at a phenomenal rate. I mean, it's mm-hmm. You guys have created such the pedal world in general is blowing up, but it's been incredible to watch you guys. And I'm just curious, when you talk about NAMM, and whenever I go to NAMM, your booth in particular is funny because it's always just like three people deep. Like, it's impossible to even say like, hey, we have mutual friends, how are you? And so, how do you manage growth? I mean, especially in 2020, this is kind of such a weird year. Obviously there's a big demand for a lot of your products. You can't keep them in stock in a lot of places. What is your philosophy about, you know, riding this wave versus, you know, scaling up, or how do you think about it?
Oh, it's been one of the bigger challenges of my life this year. I'm just like, I just really try to keep perspective on how fortunate I am, and just try to navigate all of the different problems, you know, that we face. And there's been so many positive things about this year for us, despite all the challenges. And for some reason, we've had some good years and everything, but yeah, I mean, the demand for our stuff this year has gone crazy, which just, with everything going on, it's shocking. And our main manufacturing partner is in California, so they've been especially hard hit with COVID-19, to the fact that they can't even do normal production for us. So what we've been forced to do is bring a lot more of the assembly and production in house, which has been pretty wild, because there's more people in the shop than we've ever had. We're doing it in a very safe way, spreading everybody out. Obviously, you know, everyone has to wear masks, and so trying to make sure it's an extremely safe workplace and environment, but then also, you know, making an assembly line and building pedals and assembling pedals. And this isn't something we've had to do at this scale before. So, some of my guys have really stepped up into leadership roles, you know, all of a sudden they're like, they're managing five or six people, and that like 3-4 months ago was not the case. So we're all just trying to take one day at a time, and sometimes 1 hour at a time, and always trying to keep perspective about how fortunate we are to have the problems that we have.
COVID has changed like pretty much everyone's work habits. Does having people, do you envision a future where maybe more stuff is done in-house? Like, or does this open your eyes to it, or does this just scare you and you're like, I can't wait to not look at this happening?
I think I've changed my mind on that about 10 times. Okay. At first it was like really refreshing because it felt like we had more control. And then we kind of hit a point where we're like, wow, you know, soldering isn't something you can teach someone to be like really skilled at quickly, especially with our pedals, because they're so intricate and there's a lot of stuff in small places, and it's not like a normal 3-knob overdrive, you know? So, not only is it hard to get people up to speed, cause our standard's super high. Mm-hmm. But then also it's just harder products to assemble. So there's just, you know, there's been more rework than we would have liked and all that stuff, but we're making progress in the right direction. And it's hard for me to know the answer to that question about what, you know, I never wanted to have a big company with lots of employees for some reason. It just seemed too overwhelming. But if it, we're kind of trending in that direction, so I think I'll know more in a few months, maybe.
Okay, fair answer. What is the scope of this company right now? How many people are under the roof you're at in Minnesota?
So right now we have 10 people in the shop, which is the maximum I believe we can have in Minnesota. So we're kind of just rolling with this right now, but that's, you know, it's like twice as many as we had a few months ago.
Wow.
And when we also have a guy that works remotely that does customer support for us in Seattle, Tacoma area.
Okay, where I am.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So what's a day in your life like on a normal day? Are you actually hands-on and doing some of that soldering, or is it all computers and business stuff right now?
So I've tried to not do any of that stuff, just because we're usually working on like a few projects at a time. Sometimes I'm kind of a project manager type of a role for some projects, but then I'm also doing technical work for other projects, like writing code and designing circuit boards and stuff. So, but there's just, you know, I've kind of embraced the role of kind of, you know, being the captain of the ship and trying to delegate as much work as possible and try to do the stuff that I feel like I'm good at and is going to help the company in the best way. And I think that, yeah, you know, for me to actually assemble and solder and stuff like that, it would not be like long term a smart thing, or even short term, really, because there's so much random shit to do. Sure. You know,
well, what is you as the brains of the operation, what is your creative mm-hmm. process like? I mean, I think one of the things that Chase Bliss is known for is, you know, you're not making copies of Tube Screamers that everyone has made or the same old stuff. There's sort of this organic human element, sometimes quirky, mm-hmm. Sometimes unpredictable element to your pedals that people have really loved. And I'm just curious, Where does that come from, and how do you envision what's down the pike for you guys?
Honestly, I've really leaned into collaboration. The first true collaboration that we did was the Brothers pedal with Peter Bregman of Resonant Electronic Design, and he approached me with some ideas. And at that time, I was like really not into collaboration. I like doing everything myself. I like doing the technical stuff, was kind of protective of it, and it was like my ideas, this and that. And me and him just kind of hit it off and came up with this concept pretty quickly that I was really excited about and really motivated to work on. And ever since then, it's like I just love working with other people that are good at stuff that I'm not good at. And so we've been doing a lot of collaborations. Lately, I've been working with this guy named Scott Harper, who's he's behind the Knobs demo YouTube channel. And he's like treasure trove of ideas. And we've just become really good friends. So we're always talking about ideas. You know, he's always emailing me these concepts, and then I kind of give my feedback and have other ideas, and then we kind of refine it. Usually it's like he'll send me something that's like pretty insane, and I'll just be like, that, I really like that, but let's scale back these parts a little bit, you know? And then we've kind of learned to work together. He kind of knows what to expect out of me, and I kind of know what to expect out of him. So we have several things we've been thinking about. I don't know at this point if I'll do a pedal completely on my own, just cause I really enjoy the relationships and the friendships with collaborating, and also just realize that, you know, there's some stuff I feel like I'm pretty good at, and other stuff where it's really nice to work with other people.
What are some of your weak points in terms of the pedal collaborations?
So the most glaring weak point is that I don't have really any experience writing DSP code, digital signal processing. So, you know, to design an algorithm for like a reverb or something, I've never done that. My kind of wheelhouse is analog design, and then also embedded programming for, you know, essentially writing code for microprocessors to control analog stuff. So like all the actual audio effect is still analog, but I'm just controlling it in a more sophisticated way with microprocessors. But you know, actual algorithm design for DSP is just not something I have experience in.
Is that like the next logical hire, is somebody who is a whiz at that, or not really? It doesn't interest you?
It definitely interests me. So the answer is we sort of already did that. For the Mood pedal, for example, we collaborated with David Rollo of Girolo Effects, and then Old Blood Noise, the guy that is their DSP guy over there is Dan. Gosh, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. So I'm just gonna say Dan. And you know, that was really fun because we were able to use some of the more experimental micro looping stuff that David is just amazing at, and then some of the more experimental reverb and delay and crazy digital buffer reading and writing that we were able to work with Dan. And so, that whole approach was really similar to how we how we did the Dark World pedal as well, where we worked with Cooper Effects to design one channel of a reverb, and then Robert Keeley, Aaron Tackett specifically is their DSP engineer, to design their channel. I promise I'm going to somewhat answer your question here eventually, but and then for Blooper, we found a partner in this gentleman named Mark Seal, who has tons and tons of experience in audio and programming, because we had some really sophisticated stuff we wanted to do with the looping aspect of that. But as far as like an actual Chase Bliss employee, I hired this guy named Charlie Carbiner. Officially hired him like 4 or 5 months ago, but we started working together last year when I came to the conclusion that I wasn't going to be able to, or I was having a lot of trouble writing the code for the motor control on the Automatone line. I just kind of ran into a wall where I was like, man, I need to get someone in here that really understands motor control specifically, because this is more challenging than
I think. You even posted it on Facebook, right?
And yeah, so
I remember that.
I did. Yeah. So I was like, basically what happened with that is I kind of poked around my network a little bit, trying to find someone. I looked and looked and looked, and then, you know, after I'd come to the conclusion that I was like, man, this is just kind of out of my element a bit. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to ask the internet. And so I did that. And that same day I got like 20 serious applicants. I was like, I think I can help you. And me and Charlie just hit it off. And, I just had a good feeling about him right from the beginning. He was available. So he came to Minnesota like 10 days later. And that's another thing I feel super fortunate about, because if that project was happening 1 year later, it would just, you know, for Charlie to hop on a flight and come here, it just kind of wouldn't be feasible. So, that's just another thing I try to keep perspective about, but yeah. So, you know, the idea at the beginning was that Charlie was just going to help with that, but we ended up really connecting, on a lot of different levels, and he really like-minded in a lot of different ways. He's a great communicator. So, that was really nice, and ended up, he originally lived in Florida and he moved here, about 4 months ago. About 4 months ago, I think. And Charlie is really capable of learning a lot. So he's actually, it's crazy. He has a master's degree in mechanical engineering. So his background isn't even really in writing code, but he just picked it up kinda, and he's really good at it. And now we're also, talking about him doing some algorithm design and things like that. And I guess he's already kind of messing around with some stuff, and it's really good. And so I'm, even though when I hired Charlie, it wasn't like, you are going to be, the DSP engineer at Chase Bliss, because he didn't really have that experience. He's already demonstrating that he's capable of really doing a lot in that regard as well.
Back to the collaboration thing, which is really interesting and seems to only really happen in the world of pedals. I mean, you don't hear about, Gibson and Martin teaming up on whatever. Mm-hmm. For every collaboration that we hear about that you've done, have there been a couple that just fell flat and didn't work with anyone?
Yeah, there have been. Yep. Yeah. Obviously be weird to talk about.
But. Well, I mean, just to make it doubly weird to talk about, I just come to the like band analogy, and I just wonder, like, is there a discussion up front about like how revenue is split when you do these collaborations?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. Like, I feel like the sooner you can have that conversation, the better. 'Cause you know, then it just like sets expectations, right away. And then if the, like, I always just like to kind of keep that stuff. Well, not even that stuff. I just like to keep communication open. So if like anyone has a problem with anything, or just like, let's just talk about it. Let's just figure it out, you know? But I mean, obviously, you know, when we do a collaboration, it's not only Chase Bliss that's profiting off of it. So we have to make sure that we come to an agreement that everybody's excited about, you know?
The stuff you've done with Scott, with Knobs, I mean, I imagine it's him, like you said, giving you an idea that you then can run with. But with some of the other mm-hmm. collaborations where it's actually like hardware moving from one part of the country to the other, how does mm-hmm. that play out? How do you guys manage all that?
Well, with hardware, typically I've just always designed the hardware. So that's not such a big thing, because they're, you know, they'll just send, you know, a file that will program into a processor. Okay. You know, and then it's kind of easy in that regard, because they're, I guess the one exception to that would be Maris on the CXM 1978 reverb that we're coming out with them. They designed a circuit board, because the it just made the most sense that we like plug in to the inside of mm-hmm. that.
Curious that you,
but that
I'm curious. Yeah. And forgive me if you've already done this, but like going back to your roots, has there ever been talk of a collaboration with ZVEX?
I cannot confirm or deny.
We'll leave it at that. All right.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that chapter of your life? I mean, did you go into that already knowing a thing or two about pedal construction, or is that really where the foundation all hit you?
Not really. I mean, I liked effects. I didn't have a lot of pedals. In 2008, I was starting to play out with a band more than I ever had before, and I was starting to get obsessed with pedals, but I didn't know really anything. Mm-hmm. I knew a bit about programming from college, but I was super into home recording, and you know, had some gear and liked messing around with plugins and a DAW and things like that. But as far as guitar pedals specifically, I was pretty green, okay. I would say.
And after the 4 or 5 years you were there, was it natural for you to say goodbye and like fly off on your own, or was that weird?
I mean, obviously it was weird, you know. But I just tried to be as open and honest about what I wanted to do and why it wasn't working out. It basically just came to a point where I was like, man, I just have a lot of ideas that I would love to pursue that I just can't, here. And so, yeah, it was just kind of, and well, I mean, it, actually it was a little more nuanced than that. This is kind of a longer story, but at the time I was actually getting my master's degree in speech language pathology part-time while I was working at ZVEX, and so I was just about to graduate, and of course it took me quite a while to get that degree, and my intent was to be a speech therapist and help people who stutter. And what I found was once I actually started to do that, I actually didn't enjoy it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I'm very much an introvert. So for me to like sit down and work with someone, like every day for 8 hours, I was like, after a couple of days, I was like, I can't hang. Like I just can't, this is too much human interaction, you know? And I realized, so I was, there was a time where I was working. So that was kind of like a crossroads in my life. It's like, okay, I'm graduating with a master's degree. I want to be a speech therapist, but then I'm also like, you know what? I have all these guitar pedal ideas. I could just make some pedals on the side. And also, I could still do some contract work at ZVEX. So it was kind of like this patchwork thing where I was like, I'll still, like, I don't want to leave you guys high and dry because, you know, we had some ongoing projects and stuff like that. But, like, I want to be a speech therapist. I also would like to pursue some of my own designs. But I also, if you want, I can still, you know, help out here. So for a while, I was, you know, doing some work for ZVEX, doing some stuff, you know, or working on Chase Bliss stuff, and then working as a speech therapist. And what I found right away was that the days that I was working on my stuff was so enjoyable and just like obsessive and rewarding. So it's like, I've never been an early riser, but like I was waking up at like 5 a.m. just to sneak in like 4 hours to like work on my own stuff. And it just became clear to me over the period of a few months where I was like, I don't want to do speech therapy anymore. I mean, it's kind of weird that I got this master's degree, but I got to do what I really love. And, you know, I finished up the projects I was working on for ZVEX, but then just went all in on Chase Bliss and never looked back, really.
Yeah. Do you feel like those two worlds could ever collide, where some of the technology and stuff you're doing now could have a hand in helping speech therapists or speech therapy?
I mean, there is some kind of devices out there that have had mixed results for people who stutter, where it'll kind of record yourself talking in real time and then play that back with a little bit of a delay and then pitch it up or pitch it down so it sounds like you're talking with someone else. There's this really weird phenomenon with stuttering where, like, if I were to if you and I were to open up a book right now and read it together, like chorally, I wouldn't stutter. It's like very strange. So it's supposed to like trick your brain into thinking you're talking with someone else. It actually, I don't know, I've tried it a little bit and it seems like it really works, but it's, you know, a hassle. It's weird because if you're in like a loud environment, you know, you can't get weird stuff happening. And also, for a lot of people, the effect tends to wear off as their brain kind of gets used to it. And I've just, at this point, I'm just like, I stutter, like whatever. Like I can still, I don't really think about it because I can effectively communicate regardless of, you know, being interrupted occasionally. So yeah, I mean, there could be some crossover there, but yeah, I don't really see it happening, you know, for me. I've kind of just, it's weird. Like I'm involved in the stuttering community. I have lots of friends who stutter, but I'm still a bit interested in self-help. I like helping kids at like camps and stuff like that, but honestly, largely have lost interest in stuttering. Like it's just kind of like, I don't know. It's not that interesting to me anymore. It fascinated me before when I was like, you know, crippling my life and I wanted to learn everything I could about it. But now that I've got to a place where I feel like I kind of just live a life of a fluent person, even though I stutter, I just don't really give a shit about it anymore. So I'd rather like make guitar pedals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're flourishing. You've got a family, you've got a business that's growing. It's been amazing. Do you know, have you ever heard, do you know who Paul Stamets is? This is a total aside. I'll edit this out.
Yes. He's the mushroom guy. Yeah. Right?
Have you heard his story? Yeah,
I have. I found it very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been my little side hobby lately. Not taking heroic doses of
magic. I did take a heroic dose once.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I still stutter though, so.
Okay. Did you take it because you heard that it worked for him, or you just took it because you wanted to take it?
A little bit of both, mostly just curious. I did have an experience where I did feel like maybe for a half an hour I didn't really stutter, but yeah. Does he still say that he stutters, or does he pretty much say that he doesn't stutter anymore?
It's a good question. You know, I've only heard him mention that story like on the Joe Rogan podcast, and on that there's a movie that is sort of he's the hero of that's out now, it's streaming now. And I don't know how he classifies himself. It's a good question.
Yeah.
I keep meaning to take one of his workshops, but with COVID it's not happening anytime soon.
I should listen to that. I don't think I saw him on Joe Rogan. I think I saw him tell the story in some other context. But now that you're reminding me that I would like to learn some more about him.
Yeah, the Joe Rogan one is...
I mean, not that I'm like trying to cure my stuttering, but it's just really interesting.
It's an interesting footnote, yeah. That one was funny because I'm vegan, so I eat a lot of mushrooms, but he's very cryptic about portobellas and them being bad for you. And so it's actually a funny, interesting moment in the Joe Rogan podcast where he talks about the portobello people industry as though it's like a mafia, and he can't talk because he's worried about his safety. And I'm just like, wow, I'm never touching a portobello again. Who knew?
That's wild. Yeah,
it's a classic moment. All right, that'll be the mushroom portion of the podcast, unless you want to keep riffing on it. Do magic mushrooms play a part in Chase Bliss pedals?
No. I mean, basically, I'm just wondering if I want this on. I guess I don't care. Like, I don't have a boss. I go on this camping trip once a year with my best friends, and I've gone, not with the same group, well, pretty much the same group, but like there's people that kind of rotate in and out for the last 20 years up to this place called the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Yeah. And that's been like the context for, for the heroic dose, but that's kind of it. One thing I think is, it's not the thing where you, at least for me, it's not like, you know, you have an experience like that and you're like, oh, I want to do that again tomorrow.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that I'm good for a year, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe 2 or 3 years, you know. I think for pedals I haven't had any like, it's more just like personal internal stuff. I don't think I've had any like pedal revelations or anything like that.
Got it. But let's talk a little bit about creativity beyond mushrooms. you mentioned the collaboration side of things. Well-known musicians, do they provide you with much inspiration or ideas, or is it mostly sort of the internal pedal community?
Probably about once a week we get unsolicited ideas from folks.
Are they ever good?
And sometimes, but the problem is that me and Scott have so many ideas that we're really interested in, and So there's kind of not room for, I guess, for, yeah, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't be impossible if someone came at me and like, what about this? But usually it's kind of, I mean, I hate to be critical, but like, it's not super well thought out. And it's kind of, it doesn't really fit with our, the way we, you know, our platforms. It'll be like, you know, right now, if you follow Chase Bliss, it's like, you know, that we have like our standard six knob platform. And like, it kind of like, if we're going to release a pedal in that line, it sort of has to fit within that framework. And now we've introduced a new platform, Automatone, with the motorized faders. So I'm really focused on ideas that fit within that framework. Because sometimes I find that like having those boundaries actually is really great for creativity. And also, it makes things much easier to make when you have a reference point, you know? And I like the kind of platform philosophy where you don't. So anyway, just getting back, like somebody will have an idea that will be like, you know, have like 15 knobs on it. And it's like, I'm just not going to be like, I would have to do so much work just from the hardware end. And also it's just, you know, there's just, it's like the old saying, like ideas are cheap, you know, it's easy to think of an sure. idea. It's hard to make it, you know,
the Automatone, platform, hearing you talk about it like that makes me think when that idea first came to be, were the wheels already spinning of like, what else can we stick in this box?
100%. Yeah. It was never meant to be like a one thing. I want to make like tons of pedals in this format.
Got it.
You know.
And are there any other, are you happy with those two platforms, or do you want to eventually have a third or a fourth or a fifth?
Right now I'm happy with those platforms. We're not developing a new platform right now, but that could definitely change, you know. I'm almost certain it will change. But right now it's enough for me. And it's also like we've been putting out so much stuff relatively quickly, and it's just even just like finding the money to make a bunch of the Automatone is difficult, because like buying all of the faders and just the hardware is super expensive, you know, and just getting enough to just managing cash flow is like such a challenge for a lot of small businesses, and certainly is for us, you mm-hmm. know.
You guys did one of the greatest Kickstarter videos ever for the blooper. I don't know how many takes took, but
it was one take.
You know,
it's funny because Knobs was, or Scott, I guess I should say now that people know who he is. He was totally not into the Kickstarter idea, and I was like, it was a cash flow thing. I'm like, dude, we need money to make this thing, and like my bank, if I go to my bank and say, hey, I need $400,000, they're going to laugh me out of the sure. building. I'm like, we need to, if we want to make enough of these, we got to generate some cash. And he's like, oh, you know, Kickstarter kind of gets a bad rap. And I'm like, I think we got to do it. And so then I told him, I was like, let's just, instead of doing like a flashy, fancy video, let's just have me talk for a while. We can have, the moose and the background, just kind of see what happens. So we did one take, and Knobs just loved it. And he's like, now I'm excited for the Kickstarter because I think that's a funny video. And I was like, good. All right, let's do it.
Yeah. I think every parent out there was like, how would my kid react with my Kickstarter video? It was like impossible not to compare yourself. Is that a model that you're going to just keep going with, the Kickstarter thing for the bigger pedals, or not really?
I don't think so. It was just sort of a unique time where we were developing Automatone and Blooper at the same time. And it was just, we just needed money. And I Kickstarter is like, obviously we have a big dealer network and distributors, and that doing a Kickstarter cuts them out. So they're, if you did that all the time, they'd be like, why are we trying to sell your stuff? Like, sure. you're just going to do Kickstarter. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule it out entirely. Like, maybe we'll, another situation will come up where we're just like, that's the best way for us to raise money.
Yeah.
But I don't plan to use it again.
Got it. The other video, I guess that video only lives on Kickstarter. The other video I would tell everybody who maybe doesn't know your output is that wooden box video, the retirement. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was funny when we finished that. I was like, my friend Joe Clark, who's helped us with some videos, he's helping us right now with some stuff. We're kind of documenting this transition to in-house production. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to make a video on that. But once he put the thing together, I'm like, man, I hope this isn't like just like over the top sentimental. But he's really good at kind of this like slightly longer form narrative, evocative stuff. I think that's kind of his, at least for the work we've done together, I've been super, super impressed with that, with his ability to tell a story. But yeah, that was, and then, yeah, we also had Andy Othling's music he was making with Mood. And, it just really came together in a really sweet way. And it was fun to include my parents in that because they had mixed feelings about the whole thing. I think, you know, now that they haven't been doing the boxes for a while, like, you know, they probably just can't imagine
going back
doing it because it was turning into such a crazy amount of work. But it was, you know, it was a really cool thing for us, I think, as a family.
Yeah. I mean, everyone should go watch that video. But how many boxes did they actually have a hand in, all told?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good question. This is a guess, but probably like 10,000.
Wow.
Maybe not quite. That'd be the max. I'd say 5 to 10,000. Maybe 7 or 8,000. But that's a lot of boxes.
And they were basically retired and not looking for work, and you foisted this on them?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, my wife started doing it, but then I think we had this in the video, but she was pregnant with our first son, and you know the fumes were kind of
not great.
we're like you can't stain when you're pregnant. So as soon as she got pregnant, then I talked to I don't know. I came up with my parents. I'm like, will we do it? And I was like, really? And at first they, you know, it took them a while to kind of get it right, but then they were just so particular about it, where they took, like, yeah, I love that part of the video when my dad talks about, like, this pile over here is for perfect boxes. So if Joel wants, like, an especially good one for an artist or something, and I didn't even know that he did that. And it was just, like, very cool to see how much love and pride that they put into those. Yeah. You know, it made me feel very, very lucky.
I mean, it was a beautiful thing, and it still is. And I think that's what people love about your pedals is just there's this human element behind them that I don't know that most people think about when they look at other pedals, maybe. Would you agree with that? Like, do you try to put human quirks?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, I've never been, you know, there's some companies out there that are like, this is totally professional, like the best fidelity, and this is the best this is the best sounding thing. And I've always kind of tried to take the approach where it's like, yeah, we make really good stuff, but we're humans, you know, and there's going to be our personality is going to be in these devices, you know, and there might be some stuff about them that you don't like, yeah. You know?
Well, it's also just interesting because, like, the world of pedal demo videos has evolved to where now it's largely because of Knobs and his success. Like, they're now kind of, which I think is a good thing. They're kind of like faceless and more
cinematic and evocative. Yeah.
They're almost like their own little musical soundtracks where you don't even need to be in the market for a pedal. It's just like, I'll just listen to what Knobs is playing right now. So it is kind of nice to then see the faces behind pedals and the boxes and stuff that you guys do.
Yeah.
What's, I know we're, you probably got to get back to work cause we had so many tech glitches, but, I don't want to ask where you see yourself in 5 years, but where do you want to see Chase Bliss go? Or do you want to keep it as it is and just keep kind of having fun? Money doesn't seem to be the big motivator for you. It's more, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I am motivated by money in the regards of, like, I want to pay my employees well, and, like, it's nice to have security and feel like you're okay and stuff like that. So, yeah, there is an element of, like, you're probably not going to see, like, a, you know, $900 ring modulator from us in the Automatone format because I, you know, don't think that we'd sell very many of them, even if I thought it was really cool. Or maybe I would. I don't know. I mean, what's nice is you can always do, like, limited edition kind of things for stuff that might not have, like, a super wide appeal. But, yeah, you know, I guess it's so weird because, you know, like you said, it hasn't really been that long since the company's been around, and it's kind of tough to wrap my head around where things could go in 5 years.
Do you ever feel like, I mean, it's clearly the golden era of pedals right now. Do you feel like it's going to slow down at all or has to slow down, or does it just seem to keep growing in your books?
I feel like with some of the ideas that Scott and I are exploring, I don't know how other people feel, but I just feel like there's a lot left that we can do. Almost like there's kind of like limitless things one can do with pedals. So, yeah, I really think there's a lot.
Yeah. Your pedals have come a long way from like the $60 Boss pedal or whatever. I don't know what a Boss pedal goes for anymore even, but, is there an upper limit in terms of, I mean, you've kind of pushed the boundaries in some regards of like how much a pedal can cost because of all the stuff that's going on inside of them. On your end, is there, you know, you mentioned the limited edition thing. Like, do you have a ceiling in your head of like, all right, nobody's going to buy this pedal because it would cost too much?
That's a great question. Not really, because like, I don't know, I could see us maybe making a synthesizer one day or something, and I see how much those can be, and I don't know. It really wasn't my intent to make super expensive stuff, but it's just kind of how things have turned out because I don't really like, you know, I don't like buying, I don't like making cheap stuff, and, you know, to make things in the USA and get high quality components, it just ends up costing a lot to make the things we make. So we have to charge what we charge, and it's working out so far. I'm not happy that they're prohibitively expensive for a lot of people, but you know, and maybe someday we'll do like less expensive stuff. I just don't want to do that thing where it's like, here's our less expensive line, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I want it to be there to be a reason and have some innovation behind it rather than just like a watered down version of something we already make.
Yeah. I know we have, this will be my last question. I know we have a mutual friend in Mike Baranick. Do you have any, do you have any guitar building ideas? Have you ever thought about a Chase Bliss guitar?
Not really. I'm kind of boring when it comes to guitar, unfortunately. Like a lot of people are. But yeah, I kind of don't. I mean, I think Mike makes just amazing stuff. So, I guess I'll just leave those ideas to him.
Well, Joel, thank you. This was amazing. I'm glad we finally were able to record.
Yeah, me too. And it's really a pleasure talking to you. I hope we can talk again sometime and keep in touch.